Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited today about our guest.
Always excited.
I know.
Every week, Sherry, you say, I'm so excited.
But I like to do the podcast.
I'm excited too.
Real quick, if we're weighing things that I do, 7-hour planning commission or a podcast with Drew Lachey?
I know what I would pick.
My job is to cover planning commission. I learned a lot that day, and it was great Friday to hear from so many voices who care about this city. But, you know, it's more fun to interview Drew Lachey.
Planning commission versus Drew Lachey. Yes, Drew Lachey is our guest today.
Of 98 Degrees fame, but also the creator, founder, producer, and all things of Labelless, which is really in its 8th iteration coming up this summer. So we're going to talk to him.
We're going to talk about his I don't even know how to describe it. It's a theatrical experience. It's musical. It's acting. It's something that he's done now. I guess he's in his 8th iteration. It's going to be a Playhouse in the Park. You mentioned 98 Degrees. If you didn't live through and relish the boy band era.
And I did.
Or if you were like me and kind of ignored it at the time. I mean, I'm not in the demo, Sherry. Don't give me that look. I'm sure he will understand. But I really became aware of him because we were into Dancing with the Stars, and he was the season 2 winner of Dancing with the Stars.
That reminds me. You need to do the local Dancing with the Stars. We need to get on that.
Oh, boy. I don't know about that.
It's such a great experience.
I mean, I remember cheering you on at Dancing for the Stars.
I did things I didn't know I could do.
Oh, you were fantastic.
So, and you raise money for charity. It's a great event. There's one in the spring and one in the fall. We have to get you involved.
Okay. Well,
you brought it up.
Before we bring on Drew, we did have a busy news week as Carl Weiser, your esteemed editor, likes to say we were overnewsed. But one of them, let's touch on very briefly. That PG Sittenfeld released pending appeal.
Yes.
Were you surprised?
That is an understatement of the century, probably. I was in the parking lot of CVG waiting for former President Donald Trump to come for a fundraiser. I was helping cover that. And our court reporter texted me that there was a decision in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals case that PG would be released from prison. And I thought he was kidding.
Pending appeal. Of the sentencing.
Yes. And so that is, PG is home with his family now.
Some have said that this is what being connected and having money brings you. People who have looked at this from a, you know, eye rolling, this is just how things are. But others have said this is the right thing to do, considering the nature of his conviction. You know, it was, without rehashing everything.
We don't need to on this podcast.
No, but as opposed to, you know, money going right into his pockets, like some of the other corruption charges in Cincinnati City Hall of that time. These were campaign finance flaws or errors or overreaches.
Which this is not just a PG Sittenfeld case. If you compare PG to the other Cincinnati council members who were convicted, their crimes are more criminal actions related to bribery, and the money did go to themselves and vacations and in their pocket. But PG's really does have to do with federal corruption law and campaign finance. So if you compare PG across the country, and Kevin Grosch and myself are doing this, you will see that this is all hotly contested. Other cases related to campaign finance have been overturned. So PG's not alone in that set of, you know, public finance and campaign law. So if you're comparing him to that, it is not as unusual as it seems in the greater scheme of how things get overturned.
Correct. And I can see that argument too. You know, he's certainly not a flight risk. All the things.
It does certainly suggest that it's going to get overturned, because the last thing
that
was said,
yeah,
the last thing that was said in oral arguments was PG's very good attorney. Speaking of that, your money does buy you the best corruption attorney in this country. There's just no other way to consider it. They had a high level conversation about public corruption where the judges, of course, were asking questions and they were talking about cases and dissents and this judge and this other case. And it was a free flowing conversation about public corruption cases that only the best really could have had that kind of conversation. But his last words to the judge, and it was almost like an afterthought because, you know, there was like, well, are there any more questions? The judges say no. Then there's like a pause and PG's attorney says, we would like to mention, if you're so predisposed to overturn this case, can you let PG out on appeal because he's already served, you know, 4 months of his sentence? It's so like almost like an afterthought. Then the judges don't say anything to that. And then everyone just kind of leave. And then they're going to do their next case. So it's kind of like, just it was like an awkward moment almost. But that's exactly what happened last week.
And speaking of awkward moments.
Oh,
we, last week, had an editorial board meeting with soon-to-be-exiting Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Ironetta Wright moments before she turned in her resignation.
I was wondering about that. I saw her in here, and then I was like, did she say in that meeting she was resigning?
You know, no, she didn't. And we tend to have, for our editorial board meetings, those tend to be on the record. Mm-hmm. Because that's why we're having them. We want to get information, understand complex situations. It helps our reporters who are sitting in the room. It definitely informs editorials we're going to write. But yes, that had to be one of the most interesting editorial board meetings I've been around in a long time. Probably going back to the Harry Black era of Cincinnati City Hall. Just to bring everybody up to speed, you have a relatively new superintendent, came in from the Detroit area.
As a reformer, she came in. There was some thought that the school board wanted things to be turned around. They had some very specific things they asked her for. So she came in really with that as a task that she was to do.
And it's been a little bumpy. She has not had the support of the teachers union and the other unions that represent the other types of employees in the school district. It came to a head in the last week or so where they started scheduling votes of no confidence. And one by one, all the unions had weighed in. And that put the school board in a, kind of backed them into the corner. Like, what do they do? They've had this superintendent coming up on 2 years. There has been some progress made in test scores and absentee rates and performance and things like that. But also a lot of complaints coming in about Superintendent Wright's leadership style, being kind of aggressive and non-inclusive. And, our reporter, our education reporter, Maddie Mitchell, did a great job of really kind of digging in, helping us, helping our readers understand, you know, what all this drama was about. But it came very quickly. Once those no confidence votes happened, we know now that the district's attorney approached Superintendent Wright and said, we're drawing up a severance package. You need to leave, and you will leave. It's just a matter of, are you going to resign or are you going to be terminated? So she did resign. You know, in the aftermath, I think, you know, it's very hard to dig in and understand how much of the criticism was truly because she had a leadership style that didn't work, or that she was tone deaf, or how much of it was you bring a change agent in and they start making changes and we, the collective we, you know, the greater Cincinnati we, don't like change. We don't like outsiders telling us what to do. And this market, if you will, this town has a track record of bringing in people in from the outside with great resumes, great experiences. And it doesn't work out here because they get that resistance. They don't get that support. And I'm sure there's a little bit of both that happened in the saga of Ironetta Wright. But I think I think we need to understand maybe that was the right thing to do. Maybe that was the only path forward. But I think all greater Cincinnatians should be asking themselves, what kind of reputation are we building? How are we going to recruit the best and brightest in the nation to come in and lead and work here when we have that track record? That's the question I think we...
That's my big takeaway. This is not just us talking about it. That really became the bigger conversation with leaders in our community bringing this up and talking about this. And they were taking two sides of it. Like, it was like, I was thinking about writing a story and I ultimately did not last week of like who, because it happened very quickly, but I was going to write a story of like who was in support of this and like really what were the other leaders in our community saying, because they were very divided of like, this is a singular problem or this is the bigger problem. And so you saw a divide of the other leaders who were willing to talk about it or not talk about it and not weigh in or say anything about it.
Well, leaders in the business community are concerned. A few have reached out to me, and this was, like you said, this happened quickly. So why this was all sort of still, it hadn't reached its conclusion. There were people all of a sudden paying attention to this very closely and, coming at it from both sides, coming at it from, there's no path forward. We need to, cut our bait, cut our losses and try to move forward. And others saying, this community needs to pull together and support this individual. It would be the right thing to do. Ultimately, that's not what happened. I think it's hard when you have all of the unions, six unions representing the various employees of CPS that came in with no confident votes. I personally don't see how you rebound from that.
No, agree. So now we are at a crossroads. I think this is the fourth superintendent in 5 years was the statistic, but this is coming at a very critical time. There is a very large deficit in CPS's budget. They are talking about going to a middle school structure, which is a gigantic change. There had been some suggestion that some of the community schools would close. Ultimately, that did not happen. So whatever is going to happen going forward, this person's going to come in and make very big decisions. So we do need to pay attention to our school board and what is happening. They are our elected officials. They're making big decisions for this community. And speaking of things that are just how things are in Cincinnati, we pay attention to City Hall. Thank you, everyone. But we also have to pay attention to our other elected officials, especially right now.
I couldn't agree more. Well, on that note, should we completely shift gears?
Absolutely.
All right. And let's bring on Sherry's close personal friend, Drew Lachey.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm so excited to welcome Cincinnati native, still Cincinnatian,
yes,
Drew Lachey.
Hello. How's it going?
It's good to have you this morning.
It's good to be back.
You're a frequent flyer on our podcast. At least this is the second time that I'm aware of.
I think it's the third.
How many people have done it multiple times? Am I one of the few? Is this like Saturday Night Live?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. What do they call it on Saturday Night Live?
The Fivers or
Fivers Club
or something like that.
We don't have the jackets
yet because we don't have anyone who's been on five times yet.
We're getting there. Yeah, but we have coffee mugs instead of the jackets.
Okay,
you yes. know,
okay.
And Martin Short's not going to come out and serve cocktails.
We're working on that too.
How about Marty Brandon? Thank you. Appreciate
Marty Brandon. That would be great.
We have our own Martin here.
That is funny, Francesca.
Yes.
I was just telling Lauren the other day, I said, Marty's not his real first name. It's Francesca Martin Brenneman.
I did not know this.
Yeah.
Probably I might have known it.
But we digress.
Okay, yeah. I feel like we talked about, we introduced you earlier, but I love the idea that we're introducing you now, not as 98 Degrees, like this whole huge second iteration, which is like Broadway show caliber founder and creator of Labelless.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of this wasn't something that I set out. It wasn't like, all right, here's my career path. I'm going to be in a boy band, and then I'm going to do theater, and then I'm going to transition to a nonprofit, and then I'm going to start creating and producing shows. This was never laid out. I wish I had that much foresight and, you know, drive and ambition to achieve a goal. It was just kind of, these were the situations, the opportunities that presented themselves. And I say this all the time to anybody that'll listen. My wife, Leah, is the... She's the big idea person in the family. She's the one that says, all right, this is what I want to see. This is what I want to accomplish. This is my dream. And I'm like, that sounds pretty cool. Let's do it. And then, you know, we set out together to make it happen. And yeah, so the show Labelist that we created has really just kind of taken over our lives. I mean, it basically 2018, it's 6.5 years later, and it just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling. So, yeah, we're very excited and very proud of it. And, you know, excited to see what the next chapter is for it.
Well, tell us what it is.
So Labelist is a show that we created. Like I said, 2018, it started off as a classroom exercise. You know, we were doing a music theater class at SCPA because clearly we both graduated from there, and we were, you know, teaching, you know, giving back, as the kids like to say, you know, and we were doing an acting exercise on empathy. And we asked the class to anonymously write down on little scraps of paper ways that they felt like they weren't seen or valued. And we got these scraps of paper and we went back to our house that night and put them out on our kitchen counter and saw ways that we didn't even think still existed. You know, people were being discriminated against because of, you know, their race, their sexual orientation. The people were being, you know, hated on for, you know, being female. Like their uncles were saying, you know, your place is in the kitchen. And, I mean, like archaic things that you thought we were past. And we just like literally sat there and cried, you know, that kids that we cared about were still experiencing the same things that people have been experiencing for, you know, a very long time. And from that, Leah had the idea to, you know, create some art that would help, you know, kind of bring attention to it, give them a mouthpiece, a way to get their stories out there. And that's ultimately how Labelist was born. So now Labelist is a 90-minute show that's, you know, deals with everything from mental health to bullying to homophobia, racism, you know, in a way that's still entertaining and hopeful, but, you know, uses these cast members' personal stories to you know, take the audience on a journey and hopefully open their minds a little bit.
Are the cast members the students from 2018?
We have one that is still a cast member. Some of them were original cast members, then they left for a couple versions of it and they've come back. But we've only got a couple that have been there, like, for the most part, all the way through. But it seems like every year we do another version of it. I mean, we did two in 2018. We, you know, we did it last summer at the Playhouse. We went on a fall 7-city tour across the Midwest and ended up with a sold out show in New York City on 42nd Street. And then now we're back again this summer, and we're starting to set up dates for spring of 2025 already. So, yeah, it's taken on a life of its own, and we're excited to see it grow and flourish.
When you say iterations, so you yourself and the cast wrote the music to it, and your wife?
Yeah. Yeah. So, the original version in 2018 started off with, you know, all covers, you know, everything from, a Mumford and Sons song and a James Brown song and Aretha Franklin song, you know, songs that we felt kind of drew attention, to the different storylines that we were trying to tell. And over the past 6 years, it has gone from, you know, 18 covers to 9 originals and 7 covers. You know, so just that whole process of getting the rights and getting the artists and the songwriters to sign off on the project and get behind the project has been a challenge. I never knew getting a hold of Taylor Swift would be so hard.
I'll give you a number.
I got okay. Perfect. You know, but yeah, it's kind of just grown. The stories change with every new cast member that comes in. If we're telling their story, we rewrite the story. You know, some have stayed fairly consistent as the cast members have stayed consistent, but some change every time. So it's been, it's like a living, breathing creature that changes and grows, and you know, we're it's a challenge every time we put it up because we have to keep it fresh and keep it true to what the cast member stories are.
Describe how you actually got this done the first time, because it's one thing to have a background in theater. And when I was refreshing my Drew Lachey knowledge before we started recording.
Refreshing? Come on.
I know, yeah, right?
It's not right there at the memory banks?
Well, I had forgotten this if I knew it, that you were in Spam-a-Lot.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool from a Monty Python guy. But it's got to be a huge leap from being a performer to actually producing, writing, putting the thing together. What was that? How did you get that done?
I mean, honestly, it's kind of one of those trial and error things. I mean, you set out and you're like, all right, this is what we're going to do. And you start doing it. And then when something doesn't work, you're like, oh, okay, we're not going to do that anymore, or we're going to change that. You know, clearly I've been writing music, because, you know, that's my background is in music. So, you know, that part didn't come as a big shock or challenge to anybody. Oh, Drew's going to write a song. But writing a song about sexism, you know, that isn't some, you know, depressing, morbid thing, but it's like a, you know, as the kids would like to say, that's fire. That's a, as they used to say, like, it's a bop. It's like a good hit song. You know, so it's, there are different challenges to it. I mean, so, it definitely has been a process. But you know, I'm one of those people that, you know, my whole shtick is Drew it yourself. You know, don't be scared to, you know, just try it, try to fix it yourself or do it yourself. And so that's kind of the same way we've looked at creating this show. I mean, Lee and I just, we try something. And so if it's her choreography or, you know, the flow of the show or something, if it works, great. We continue to build off. If it doesn't, we scrap it. No harm, no foul. We build and we create something different. And unfortunately, the show over those, I guess this is labeled as 8.0 this summer. Every version has grown and changed and continued to morph into, you know, this 90-minute piece that continues to leave audiences, you know, dancing and crying and clapping and thinking.
What is this iteration? What's new about this one, or what's different or exciting about it for you?
So from last summer to this summer, there's another song that's gone in, another new song. We do have a few cast members that are new. So we have some new stories to tell there. Even if they are similar stories, we want to make them as truthful and real to their lives as possible. You know, we've used Brave Berlin for projection. So every time that a story changes, the projection changes, the cast changes. You know, we have,
you know, Brave Berlin from Luminosity, right? And some early iterations of Blink.
Yeah, they've kind of helped put projection on the map here in Cincinnati. So we feel very fortunate and blessed that they are part of this show and help us, you know, kind of elevate our visuals and the storytelling. We have different set pieces. We have it constantly is changing,
and that's because it's very much autobiographical for the performance that you have in that iteration.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. It's like, one of the new cast members coming in, he comes from Birmingham, Alabama. And so his stories of growing up and the struggles that he had growing up are going to be very different than some of the struggles that people had here in Cincinnati, or one of our cast members that's from Pasadena, California. You know, so they bring their own truth and their own stories to the show, which is what makes the show work. And I say this all the time, that they have to be some of the bravest performers ever, because they're not getting up there and they're not doing Sound of Music and they're playing, you know, Captain Von Trapp or, you know, Maria. They are, for all intents and purposes, playing themselves and telling their true life story. So if the audience embraces that, it's very supportive and it's very loving. We've had shows, you know, in certain areas where, you know, the racism section might not sit so well, or the homophobia section might not sit so well.
Isn't that where the story needs to be told?
Exactly. And that is kind of our, you know, those are our marching orders, is to get the story out there to as many places as we possibly can and have as many people see it. Because, yeah, it's a great show that people are, you know, love the music and they love the choreography and the stories, and it takes you through a range of emotions, but it also will make you think. It'll make you think about, you know, kind of how you see people, how you see yourself. And that's kind of what the show is built to do.
So how close are you to getting on Broadway? I mean, I've seen parts of this and it is really amazing. It seems like it belongs there.
It definitely.
I'm not just saying that because you're like the guest. Like, well, I didn't know what to expect when I first heard the.
I'm a multi-time guest. Let's just make sure that we don't just kind of
okay. Three timer.
We can't just brush over that.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
You know, if Tom Hanks was here again, you know, you say, "Oh, back again." You know, no. Every time we do it, it's one step closer. You know, we have different buyers coming in from different theaters, not only in New York but regionally and across the country, coming into the Playhouse this summer to see the show with. You know, goals of taking it back out on tour. And ultimately, the goal is to sit it down on Broadway. I mean, that is kind of the feather in the cap of every producer or creator, is to have their show, you know, sit down in New York. Is that our ultimate goal? Is that our defining, you know, moment of success? No. For us, the defining moment of success for Labelist is that it's changing people's lives, that it's moving people, that it's getting these stories out there and keeping them in people's consciousness. You know, so if you're in New York and you want to spend, you know, $200 on your favorite Broadway show, you know, it might make it a little bit harder for people that need to see Labelist to come see Labelist. If we're coming to the theater in your city and we're on tour and you're getting to interact with our cast as they're doing different things in, you know, different markets around the region, that is where Labelist is really going to grow and its message is really going to grow.
So how hard is it to mount a show like this from Cincinnati?
Honestly, Cincinnati has clearly everybody knows a very strong, vibrant art scene. The biggest hurdle that I feel like we have in Cincinnati is we like to tell ourselves, oh, we're just from Cincinnati, so it's the people in New York that do this, or it's the people in California that, no.
Especially that's, in today's world.
Yeah, that's kind of where we are, where we're trying to change the kind of the narrative, is that great art can come from anywhere, whether it's bands, whether it's theater, whether it's visual art, whatever the art is, it can come from anywhere. It is not exclusive to a region. And people, a lot of times, especially with theater, are like, oh, it has to come from New York. And then you have to do your previews at, you know, La Jolla Playhouse, or go to Chicago or Toronto. Or no, we're doing our previews on our journey to Broadway at the Tony Award-winning Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park.
It is so beautiful. Our playhouse, our newly redone last year, is just incredible. It's
So we're in Mo and Jack's place, the Rouse Theater, right there on the big stage, and we have some great sponsors that are continuing to come on board. So for us, Cincinnati has embraced this show kind of as its own because it was born here. These stories were started here in Cincinnati. These cast members, a lot of them are from Cincinnati. Not all of them. Every time we do it, we have people coming from all over, you know, California. We got one from Guadalajara, Mexico. You know, so we're an international theatrical experience now.
So tell us about the run at Playhouse.
So the run at Playhouse starts on July 6th. So everybody gets a day to recover from their 4th of July. And then they can come to our opening night, July 6th. We run through the 19th at the Playhouse. All the tickets are available through the Playhouse website, cincyplay.com. Clearly, you can follow us on socials, Labelist Musical on Instagram, and that will kind of get you kind of caught up on everything that's going on. You know, whether it's our pop-up shows, we know we just kind of launched our Unplugged series, which kind of helps us get our brand out there even more.
Is this a Ghost Baby?
Ghost Baby, yep. So, you know, when we can't take our cast
Speaking of
20.
Speaking of great venues.
I know. Another Cincinnati legend. As we're getting our show together, sometimes 20 people on a massive stage like we have at Playhouse in the Park isn't available. So we have a scaled down version of the show, which is more a storyteller kind of show, like how the show was built, how it was born, kind of how the stories came about. That's, you know, 8 cast members and a piano and a guitar. And it's a much more stripped down kind of version. But, you know, the brand of Labelless is not just exclusive to one thing. We'd like to say it is a movement. It's a form of consciousness. How are you able to look at yourself and how you're able to look at each other?
Where would somebody see the unplugged version?
Right now, it's been shown at Ghost Baby, and other than that, that's the only exclusive venue that we've had for it so far. But the show is built now, and so as we go into different cities and we're able to do a main stage production of it, we're also able to do a smaller club or go into schools and things like that. Because while our message is universal, a lot of times, you know, kids are the ones that need to hear it as much as the adults.
Right. There's different spaces where they're at. You're going where they are.
Yeah. Sometimes everybody's not going to be able to come to the theater at night. So we've done different versions where we've gone into boys and girls clubs or different theater companies or education spaces, schools, and done the show. So yeah, we're trying to make it as accessible to everyone as possible.
And you have, as far as like the grassroots level of promoting it, getting the word out, sharing the stories. I mean, my first exposure to it, I believe, was at a fundraiser for Cancer Free Kids.
Yeah.
And so you're already going into that type of situation where your heart's like ready to break as these kids tell their stories. And then the powerful experience of watching that version of the cast perform blew people away.
Yeah.
I don't think they knew what they were getting into.
I mean, again.
And it was just, I mean, you know, I don't know what people's preconceived notions of Drew Lachey are, but like, you don't roll in with an entourage and a road crew. Like, you're there like a high school music teacher, plugging in, you know, messing with the sound,
yeah.
Just like no job too small, you know, thing.
That's kind of the way I am this cast's entourage. You know, I am the support that they need, just the way as like when I'm on the road, I have people that are supporting what I'm trying to do. So, you know, there's versions of the show that have huge crews and we're in union houses and we got projection and, you know, lights and all this stuff. And then there's versions where it is very stripped down and it is, you know, a tiny little PA system, a couple microphones, a guitar, a piano. And honestly, those moments, like the Cancer Free Kids moment that you're talking about. So that was Sarah and Lexi, and they came out and they just sang their hearts out. That was all they did. They stood there and they just sang. And the song that they sang is from the show. It's called You Are Seen. And it is all about being able to see yourself and being able to see other people. And that is the common thread that is through the show. You know, we're doing another one coming up. And they're performing a song called Fight Alone, because no one is meant to fight alone going through this world. So it's all about community and building community. So the messages of our show fit for a lot of different, you know, organizations and nonprofits. So anytime we can team up with great nonprofits like, you know, Cancer Free Kids or One in Five or, you know, La Soup or any of these great organizations we have around Cincinnati, we are more than happy to lend our voices to help getting their message out as well.
So are you still, I see on social media, 98 Degrees, you still have performances there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we still get out and shake our money makers, you know. You know, so that's kind of the...
Did you think, like, there would be a resurgence of interest in the boy bands? Like, they would be cool again?
Well, you know, 25 years ago when we started, I never thought the interest would leave. And then when it left, I was like, oh,
what do we do now?
Whoops. You know, so I think... You know, I think the...
I've seen 98 Degrees not that long ago.
Well, yeah. Well,
we're Strawberry Festival in Florida.
Oh, yes.
That was our last show before COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a interesting situation because we were there and we're like, oh, what's this little thing going on? We were supposed to go out the next weekend. And then all of a sudden we get a call saying, guys, do you really feel like going to Arizona right now? We're like, why? We're like, because... The world is shutting down. We're like, okay. So once the NBA canceled their season, we were like, I think that's a good sign that we should be canceling our shows too. But yeah, we still go out.
I had so much fun.
Oh, it's a blast. I mean, that's what we're not trying to recreate
the
wheel.
The line, there was hundreds of people like for that part of it.
Sometimes we still got it. when we've had a good nap and, you know, the Metamucil's kicked in, we still got it, man. It's good.
And you had a Christmas song, right?
Yeah, we still are putting on music. We're actually in the studio right now creating new music.
How do you have time for all of this?
I don't.
When you say in the studio, do you bring everybody here? Do you go out to LA?
It's crazy.
Or are you guys all like recording stuff individually?
A little bit of all of it.
Yeah.
When we are together in the same space, we will take the opportunity to, you know, they're called gang vocals. Like, we'll all get around one mic together and just because you get a lot of the natural reverb of the room, you get a little bit of extra, you know, filling of the sound. And then, you know, we record our individual harmonies, you know, separately. And then you, oh, the technical nerdy stuff. Then you stack them and then you pan them left and right. And then you throw extra reverb on them. And so that's how you get like.
That's what Phil does with the podcast when we're recording too.
He put lots of reverb on me. I sound very sexy with lots of reverb on me. You know, so it's kind of this way that we do it. But Nick's in Hawaii. Jeff's in Las Vegas. Justin and I are here when Justin's not in Colorado. You know, so it does become challenging to record. So we all kind of have our own individual recording rigs and we'll do it in our own space. We'll, you know, sometimes get the producer on, you know, online with us. And, you know, there's this technology that if you have, you know, fast enough internet service, the producer can control our recording rigs.
That's
virtually
crazy.
From where he lives in Arizona. So he'll be able to control like, oh, all right, you're in your Pro Tools or Logic or Ableton or whatever. And he'll just be able to like literally take control of your computer, make whatever adjustments. So we've been trying to take advantage of technology and how it can make our lives a little bit easier. But there is nothing like spending the day in like a recording studio where like, oh, Frank Sinatra recorded here. Oh, this is where the Beach Boys recorded Pet Sounds.
That's the part that's in LA.
Yes, it is. You know, so being a part of history and the nostalgia that comes along with that and, you know, the late night, you know, food runs or whatever at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're like really just trying to get that mix just right. There's an energy to that, but the technology is definitely available to make it so you can record from literally anywhere in the world.
That was one of the, I think, neat things that came out of COVID was watching musical artists do what you're describing.
Yeah.
Fast internet connection, collaborations, interesting collaborations that might not have happened without people just getting bored and, you know, like father-daughter stuff. You know, I'm thinking of one of the singers for Tears for Fears did a version of one of their songs with the daughter. It was just all this cool stuff coming. Willie Nelson and his sons and everything like that. Like, don't let a good pandemic go to waste, I guess, is the moral of that story. So, Strawberry Festival?
Strawberry Festival.
Sherry, I had no idea you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you don't pass up a good Strawberry Festival. I mean.
And they're in season now, too, so.
This is true. I have to go back.
So,
family who lives there.
What does the 98 degree schedule look like?
So we're kind of off for the summer for all intents and purposes, partially because, you know, I'm here.
You're
doing labelists.
Yeah.
I'm doing labelists. I got a kid going off to college in August and, you know, so, you know, life is lifing right now. Things are very busy. So we have some shows already set up for September, some in October. I can't give away the schedule yet, but for those fans of 98 Degrees in the tri-state area, you won't have to travel too far.
Excellent.
If everything gets locked in. You know, so we're excited. You know, the weekend warrior model fits us right now. You know, Nick's got, you know, everything from a fifth grader down to a first grader. I've got a, you know, college or a high school senior and going to be a high school freshman. Jeff's got kids as well. So everybody's got lives that they're trying to balance. So us going out.
And Justin is very busy at City Hall.
Justin stays busy.
Yeah,
Justin's
very involved in the railroad sale. Vocal about his opinions on it.
Yep. Justin is a frequent letter to the editor emailer.
So I feel like City Hall is one of his children.
Yes. Yes. So we all have other, let's just say, passions or responsibilities. So going out on weekends, you know, it allows us to kind of keep our 98 degrees fire alive. Stay out there connecting with our fans, but, you know, also allows us to be dads and, you know, be at home sometimes where we need to be.
All right. Well, we will come and find you.
You will. I'm not in a demo.
You'd be surprised.
When he was kind of being effusive about Labelist, I was going to say, he's not just saying that. Like, the day after he saw the performance, he, like, came in the newsroom and was, like, telling everybody about it and, like, really, like, just spreading the word, like, organically.
Oh, it was like, it just blew people away.
Yeah.
I'm a habitual people watcher. So, like, I was like, Do people see that I'm about to cry here? And then I was like, okay, I got to look around. And then it didn't matter because everybody else was crying.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that powerful. And
yeah, it's a...
And unexpected, like I said. You know, you roll into these fundraisers and, you know...
Oh, we've all been there. You know, it's the rubber chicken dinner.
Right.
Then
it was just the coolest thing.
Yeah, so for me, I'm the same way. I like to watch... Clearly, I've seen the show a couple times. you know, so I'm still... you know, aware of what's going on stage, but I like to watch the audience's reaction. I like to see what's moving them at different moments, what songs are hitting, which cast members are they really connecting to at any certain location. You know, so for me, it's the same way. Like, I look around and, you know, I'll see the biggest, burliest guy that walked in and he's just sitting there like sobbing. You know, sometimes because, you know, they see themselves on stage. Sometimes they see their child, their grandchild on stage, you know, represented on stage. And it really is just a moving piece that, you know, like I said before, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you want to get up and dance. You know, it's a well-rounded theatrical experience, we like to think, where it's part concert and part extravaganza.
Has it launched anybody's career on Broadway?
Yeah.
Have you had...
Yeah. So, the young lady who is starring as Dorothy in The Wiz right now was here in Labelist last summer. And so she is now, you know, getting honored with Drama Desk nominations and she made her Broadway debut. She actually flew from, here. In our rehearsal process, we flew her back to New York so she could audition for it. Then she came back to us. She was with us when she got the call that she booked the role. And, you know, in her bio, in the playbill on Broadway, it says, you know, that she was in Labelist and part of Labelist, and she still reaches out to us.
National tour of Labelist, right?
Yeah. So she's just the first.
I just came up with a story assignment just now, Sherry, for one of our inspiration stories. So,
as happens sometimes.
Well, that's good. If you're not going to break news, like tell us, you know, when your next 98 Degrees show is, at least you gave us a good story today. So.
Yeah, we got a couple people that were on The Voice. We got people that, you know, are going on to Broadway. We got people that, you know, are coming from all different, you know, backgrounds and walks of life. And some people never knew they could sing until they got out of high school and then realized. And, you know, I think that's part of the power of this show is that it's not just a bunch of, you know, people who do theater. It's not a bunch of theater kids. It's people that are true to who they are and are telling their story. They're not necessarily playing a part. And I think that makes it that much more powerful.
So you mentioned one of the talent shows that one of your, which
The Voice.
One? The Voice, yes. Mm-hmm. Those who are big Drew Lachey fans know that you have some of that on your resume as well. Season 2 winner of Dancing with the Stars.
Yes.
And then several shows after that. Do you have anything along those lines?
Oh, lined
cooking?
Up? I mean,
I'm trying to get him to break some news. Shit.
Yeah, okay. I'm constantly working on different, like pitching different show ideas. There is a show idea that we're pitching along, more along like the DIY kind of space.
Okay.
Because anybody that follows me on Instagram knows that is like that's my other passion.
I drew it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So it is,
picked up on that.
Yeah. It is. So we're pitching a show about that. We've actually also started pitching a doc series about Labelist and Labelist being on the road. So hopefully in the spring of 2025, and we're putting that tour together right now, hopefully we will be documenting that journey and how the cast goes into different communities and interacts with communities allows those communities to be seen. So yeah, we always shows percolating. You know, I can't sit still. That's a blessing and a curse.
Well, we're glad that you sat still for 40 minutes to be on our podcast again. Phil, usually at this time when we're running long, Phil will start to wave. Yeah, like that's the wave. But because you are a busy guy, we want to thank you, let you go do great things.
I appreciate it.
And again, label this at the Playhouse in the Park, July 6th through the 19th. Tickets available at all the usual places, I'm sure.
CincyPlay.com.
All right.
All right, we'll see you there.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Sherry. Well, that was a fantastic interview. Drew's always great. You know how great he is?
How great, Burl.
We kept him on for the final segment.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the That's So Cincinnati segment of the podcast. And when we stopped recording, Drew and I started talking about the Reds. And Sherry's like, stop! We're having a That's So Cincinnati
because,
moment.
You know, That's So Cincinnati moment is the things that you've been talking about. Like, all weekend, like, I went to a party on Saturday. I was at Philly Market on Sunday. Like, people were talking about the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah.
And so That's So Cincinnati moment
I mean, so Drew's wearing a black on black red hat. That's one of my favorite Reds hats to wear as well.
You can tell I like black.
Yes. And I just, so we'll start where we left off.
Okay,
as a fellow Reds fan, are you panicking? I mean, they came off this road trip. What went 3-10? They're banged up.
So historically, the Reds have not done necessarily the greatest on West Coast road trips. I mean, that's just over the last 20 years. I mean, when I lived in LA, I would go to Dodger Stadium and see them play, and it was the same thing. So I'm not necessarily freaked out because they had a not so great, you know, run. They're also still a very young team. So I feel like they're going to continue as the season goes on, build more consistency. As the seasons go on, this team is going to continue to mature and get stronger as a unit.
But this was the season that we were hoping.
Who said that?
Everybody.
Come on.
I mean, ownership.
Of course, ownership says it.
Our Reds reporters.
That this was going to be a playoff season. And it's right now, I mean, it's a long season.
It is.
It's hard to see that now. I mean, the pitching's kind of there. Hunter Green is looking good. But, I mean, they lost McClain. Who knows what's going on with TJ Friedl? You know, I don't even want to talk about the suspended one. Like, like we needed that on top of everything else.
It's going to be... It's a long season. No, I'm not panicking.
Oh, my God, you guys, this is so Cincinnati.
Get some middle reliever and help.
We
remain
ever hopeful, and I agree with this sentiment, but this is very Cincinnati of us.
That's the way Cincinnati is. You know, I got a shirt that says, the red seats raised me.
Is it a Cincinnati shirts?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, so much of my wardrobe is Cincy shirts.
We're talking about his shirts.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I love them because I go in there, I'm like, that's something you don't see anywhere else. That's a completely Cincinnati thing. You know,
that's such an inside Cincinnati thing.
Cracker Bombs. You know, my son rocks a Cracker Bomb shirt, you know, the Skyline hot sauce.
As listeners of this podcast know, my son stole my Cracker Bomb t-shirt. Like, I haven't seen it in a couple of years right now. But
is even the more red that. Seats so raised Cincinnati. Me. We're talking about Cracker Bombs.
The red seats raised me is so insider because you either know or you don't.
Yeah.
Like, I remember sitting in the red seats asking my dad, why can't we be in the blue seats? He knew somebody, and then we got into blue seats. That was a big day in my life. But
I never sat in the blue seats until I was an adult. But you know, the red seats, you know, you had the good student discounts that you would get. So if you got good grades, you got a cheap seats, you know?
Yeah.
And there was a time when, you know, for us, you know, we'd ride the Metro downtown. We'd get some White Castles. Then we'd go to the game. And it was like this whole big old thing. At the time, I didn't realize that was just the cheapest way you could possibly go to a Reds game.
No, yeah.
Kids don't know. Yeah.
You don't know, but that's a very Cincinnati experience right there. All right. Well, thanks for hanging on for the third segment.
You are
the first guest that we held over to the final segment of the podcast.
Wow.
So I don't know what that says.
So multiple appearances and first time.
All right.
I should just become a co-host next, you know? That's the next step up.
I'm going to go on vacation soon here. If you're not busy, you can. That
Let
would
me
be
know.
Hilarious. All right.
Give me a call. I got nothing else going on.
All right. Or when Sherry goes on vacation.
I'm going to go on vacation.
We're going to have an all-Reds version of the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be sweet. All right. Well, thanks again, Drew.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you for listening to That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Inquirer and Cincinnati.com.
That's So Cincinnati is sponsored this week by Cincinnati.com, the online home of The Enquirer. If you'd like to sponsor an episode listened to by thousands each week, email me personally at belove@cincinnati.com. I'm forced to fake a smile, a laugh every day of my life.
That's So Cincinnati was produced today by Phil Didion. Lisa Gillespie books our guests. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and share us with a friend.
And finally, if you value local journalism, please consider a digital subscription to The Enquirer. Just click on subscribe at the top of Cincinnati.com. And remember, my heart can't possibly break when it wasn't even whole to start with.